Chapter 1, Crossing the Threshold. Melissa sat at the desk of the legal officer of the airport police. Her hands were handcuffed behind her back. The supervising officer who had arrested her was sitting next to her and scrolling through his phone. The legal officer, a smartly dressed young man, perhaps 5 years older than her, was filling out paperwork. On his desk was her passport, from which he was reading her details and writing them into a form. The legal officer was wearing a name badge. Melissa read Mr. Mengistu. A large fan in the corner was humming while creating a gentle breeze. Her boyfriend, Arbeck, had been dismissed from the supervisor's office. He was a citizen of Grabish, and his papers had been in order. The supervisor had unlocked the door of his office and let him out. Arbeck had told her he would be waiting for her once the airport police were done processing her. Then the supervisor had brought her here. On their way through the corridors, she had seen naked men with collars cleaning the furniture and mopping the floors. She had been shocked at the sight of them. Slaves, she thought to herself and shuddered. She had never seen slaves before. Despicable how they were being kept by the airport police, she thought. They had then waited outside the legal officer's office, seated in a line of chairs along the corridor. After a brief wait, a nude black woman wearing only a collar had come up to them and inquired if the officer wanted coffee. He had nodded yes, and she soon brought him a cup. She didn't engage with Melissa, likely due to Melissa's hands being cuffed. Melissa had been shocked to see a woman treated like this. Surely this must be a violation of human rights. Even if these people were slaves, there was no reason to deny them clothes. The police department was run by a gang of filthy perverts, she concluded. Once in the legal officer's office, the supervisor briefed him on the matter. She didn't understand what they were saying because they conferred in Grabician. During the briefing, the legal officer looked at her a few times with a surprised look on his face. Finally, the supervisor asked her to reaffirm her status as a slave before the legal officer, and she complied. The legal officer took his seat and started on the paperwork, methodically filling out and stamping documents. His work was briefly paused when the same enslaved woman from before entered to deliver what looked like a mug of iced tea. Melissa was again taken aback by the sight of the bare, collared black woman in the office, while the officials carried on as if this were perfectly normal. Melissa looked up at the legal officer as he rose from his seat and went to a cabinet to take out a collar. He put it on his desk, read a series of numbers inscribed on it, and then wrote them into the form. After thoroughly reviewing the document, he concluded,
"Everything seems in order."
He slid the form along with a pen across the desk. With her hands bound, Melissa could only inspect the form visually. She noted her name and personal information at the beginning, followed by a caller ID number and her boyfriend's full name. The document was dotted with legal jargon, which she glossed over. At the end, there was a signature under Witness 1, already filled in by the legal officer, and an empty line for Witness 2. The supervisor picked up the pen and added his signature there. The legal officer then retrieved the form, applying several official stamps to it.
"All right, Ms. Mora, please stand."
Melissa complied and stood up as the officer approached with the collar. He turned to the supervisor, saying with a nod toward Melissa,
"If you could assist."
The supervisor rose, gently lifting her hair to bare her neck. The legal officer opened the collar and placed it around her throat. With a clear metallic click, the collar locked into place. He continued to adjust it, the sound of multiple clicks resonating as it tightened. The officer was holding the collar in his fist, making sure to have his fingers on the inside to prevent it from tightening too much around Melissa's neck. Once satisfied, he released his hold on the collar, pushed something on the inside, eliciting one final click.
"To prevent further tightening."
The supervisor let go of her hair and it fell back down. Then he took out a key and released her from her handcuffs. Finally, she was free of them. Melissa brought her hands in front of her and rubbed her wrists. Then she felt around the collar that was now locked on her neck.
There is no lock,
she noticed.
How do I get this off? Then she reconsidered her question. I mean, how can Arbeck, I mean, my master, unlock this?
The supervisor explained that.
This collar has a magnetic lock. Once your master has a collar for you, he can collar you with that, and we will remove this collar.
What does it say on it?
The supervisor read.
Property of the state of Grabesh. ID number 147389.
Melissa was alarmed.
What? No! Why am I property of the state?
This was getting out of hand. Arbeck would not be able to take this collar off once they'd left the airport. That was bad enough. But property of the state sounded like Arbeck would not even own her. Her thoughts were racing.
Don't worry, Miss Mara. It is only temporary. As soon as your master has a collar for you, we will remove this one. In fact, he can go to any major police station and they can do this as well. It is just a formality.
Oh,
Melissa acknowledged, calmed by this.
It was the state property bid that worried you, wasn't it?
Mr. Mengistu asked and smiled.
Slaves wearing these collars are almost never actually state property. The collars are a legal tool when ownership of a slave is more complex. For example, when a slave is paid for in installments, or a slave is used as collateral for a loan, or in your case, where the state has taken temporary ownership until your boyfriend has bought a collar. In cases like these, the slave is issued one of these collars. The legal terms are filed in a central database and linked to the ID number. That way, the police can look it up and will know that they can remove this collar from you when your boyfriend turns up. Neat, isn't it?
Melissa nodded politely, but she had tuned out of his lecture. She didn't care about technical details. She just wanted out of here and was trying to come to terms that Arbeck's slave ruse would not be over after she had passed the border checkpoint, as he had promised. Arbeck would not be able to get this collar off. This would take longer than she had thought. Arbeck would have to put his own collar on her so this collar could be removed. Then, once they were in private, Arbeck could remove his collar and she could be free again, and this surreal slave episode would be over. In the meantime, she could maybe wear a scarf or a turtleneck to cover the collar when out in public so people would not think of her as a slave. Then again, the climate in Grabesh was hot, and wearing such items would surely look suspicious, so maybe she would just have to live with a demeaning collar around her neck for a day or so.
Can I go now?
Please remove your clothes and personal items, Miss Mora,
the legal officer ordered.
What?
It is part of the slave code,
the supervisor said.
I gather your boyfriend, Mr. Gotan, forgot to mention that to you.
Melissa was devastated. Was that why all the slaves she had seen had been naked? She had assumed that their nudity had been cruelty of the airport police to degrade them. No way. That could not be true.
This has to be a joke. Are you telling me that all slaves have to be naked in this country?
The legal officer recited the relevant bit of the slave code.
Slaves are not allowed to wear clothes unless they have a reasonable excuse. Slaves wearing plain clothes are a serious issue because it means they are trying to pass as free people. Falsifying your status is an offense in Grabesh.
The men just looked at her expectantly. After a pause, the supervisor said,
You don't have a choice, Miss Mora. I imagine that the enforced nudity can be hard on some slaves at the beginning of their enslavement.
But people will stare at me. Everyone will be gawking.
Mr. Mengistu shrugged and looked at her as if saying, Yeah, well, but this is how it is. She imagined herself strolling down a street without any clothes on. What would that be like? In her mind, she saw people reacting. she saw men and women turning their heads. Men were stopping and staring at her. Women were outraged at her brazen display, while younger folks whipped out their smartphones and made video clips of her to share with their friends. She saw kids pointing at her, calling out to their mothers. Dogs were barking at her. She felt sick from the glance set by her imagination running wild.
What about children? They would see me naked too. They are going to be traumatized. This is completely nuts.
Ms. Mora, the conditions of slavery might be shocking to you because it is not part of your culture. But in Grabesh, people are accustomed to slavery. People will take as much offense to your nakedness as they are offended by a naked dog or a naked horse. Have you ever looked at a horse or a dog and felt offended? Or thought that they should be wearing clothes? Or worried that their lack of clothes might somehow traumatize children?
Melissa sighed. She didn't know how to respond to that. This was the final straw. She wanted out.
I can't do this. I've had enough. Just take me to the detention facility and deport me as soon as flights resume.
That is not how this works, Ms. Mora. You can't just choose to go to immigration custody. You are legally a slave now, and you are owned by a citizen of Grabesh. That means your presence here is no longer illegal. The issue now is that you are in violation of the regulatory code for slaves. The regulatory code states, as I just said, that slaves must be naked unless they have a reasonable excuse to wear clothes. Only free people have an unconditional right to clothes.
And if I refuse?
Then you will make the acquaintance of Mr. Sparky here.
While unfastening the baton from his hip belt, he held it towards her and pushed a button. Melissa saw sparks flying between the electrodes at its end, accompanied by a threatening crackle. Feeling resigned, Melissa looked down. She did not believe that her nudity was an actual legal requirement. That was absurd. She was convinced that these men were abusing their authority to make a young white woman strip in front of them. She imagined they'd share a laugh about it later. But she also did not want the supervisor to use his taser on her. She sighed in frustration before stripping down to her underwear, revealing her flawless pale skin. She sensed the warmth of the linoleum against her bare feet. Melissa possessed a slender frame, the kind typical of youth, but with an added definition from her recent habit of regular running. She enjoyed the escape into fresh air, a welcome switch from sitting when studying. Consequently, her physique was fit and well-toned. She looked at the men.
Is this okay? The supervisor replied.
No.
Melissa gave out a stifled cry as her butt cheeks cramped up, pain spread through her body, and her legs started shaking uncontrollably. The supervisor had touched her behind with his baton and had switched on the sparks. After a few seconds that felt like an eternity, she fell to her knees and caught her fall with her hands. Melissa breathed heavily while trying to come back to her senses. She was in her underwear on all fours with two men who really wanted her to undress for them. Her body was throbbing. She felt the weight of the steel collar on her neck. Cold sweat was beading on her forehead, her back, and drops of sweat were running down her legs and thighs.
Get up, slave, and remove your clothes. I won't say it again.
Melissa slowly rose to her feet, holding on to the desk for balance. Her legs felt shaky and still shivered unpredictably. She made a mental note of all this, and once she was out of here, she would file a complaint against this brute. He would regret this, but for now she would do what he said. She did not want the supervisor to use the taser baton on her again. Melissa removed her bra, revealing two perky handfuls of teardrop-shaped breasts. They were pale and creamy, markedly whiter than the rest of her skin, due to their constant cover from sunlight, making her breasts appear even more pristine. Her areolas were large, as opposed to the common, smaller, darker circles seen on many women. The diameter was akin to the loop formed by her thumb and middle finger, making them notably prominent, as if designed to draw the eye. enhancing the sense of her exposed state. Melissa handed her bra to the supervisor, who put it into the plastic bag. Finally, she hooked her thumbs into the back of her slip and pulled it down to her knees, revealing her blonde pubic hair framed into white skin in a mild tan line. Melissa did not shave her pubic region, opting instead for occasional trims that allowed her hair to form a modest bush. This choice stemmed from her physical anatomy. Her inner labia extended beyond her outer labia, a feature she was self-conscious about. During her school years, she was occasionally required to shower after gym class, an experience she found distressing. Observing her classmates, she noticed many had a configuration where the outer labia concealed the inner, which she considered more aesthetically pleasing. To mask her own perceived flaw, she cultivated her pubic hair into a neat, dark blonde triangle. This helped her feel less exposed when she viewed herself in the mirror, making her more comfortable with her appearance. Arbeck had said that he preferred a woman with pubic hair. She had been relieved when he had said that, because it meant she could keep her bush of pubic hair. Melissa moved her legs together and let her slip fall to the ground. She stepped out of it and squatted to pick it up with her thumb and index finger. The supervisor held the open bag in front of her, and she released the slip to drop into it. Melissa stood fully bared before the two men, the gentle breeze from the fan whispering across her skin, subtly stirring her pubic hair and sweeping through the space between her legs. Feeling exposed, she instinctively shielded her breasts with one arm and her pubic area with a hand in an attempt to preserve some modesty.
Your hair tie as well, Miss Maura.
So she was not even allowed to tie her hair together into a ponytail. But given she was already nude, this was not so bad, and she almost felt grateful not to be tased again for failing to hand this over. Melissa pulled off her hair tie, and she felt her long hair spread and fall on the bare skin of her back.
And your rings.
Melissa was wearing a few decorative rings. She quite liked them, but she would get them back. The police would hand her belongings to Arbeck, and then she would put them back on again later. This was all just temporary, she reminded herself. Melissa pulled the rings off and dropped them into the plastic bag.
All right.
The legal officer saw Melissa's unease and tried to offer some comforting words.
You know, Miss Maura, this is not so bad. Being naked has a lot of advantages. Grabesh has a hot climate, and being naked really helps with that.
She saw the legal officer put the form into a folder, together with her passport, while he was speaking. The folder went into a box, and he took the bag with her clothes and put it into the box as well. He put her backpack onto the box, bringing all of Melissa's belongings neatly together.
Thanks, Sergeant. That's all I need. I'll pack this up and send it off for archiving.
The supervisor said,
Thanks, Mr. Mengistu.
From the corner of her eyes, Melissa saw the supervisor reach into his back pocket. Then he took her right hand that was covering her pubic area and snapped a cuff around it. Melissa did not resist. Her life and her body were now fully in the hands of these strangers. The supervisor gently turned her away from him, grabbed her left arm that was covering her breasts, and positioned it behind her back to lock her left wrist to the handcuffs.
Let's go,
he said,